This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Hello and welcome to Ask an Astronomer for April 2017 Extra. Our first question comes from Mark Shaw, who asks, in light of the new MetaLens developments, how will this affect optics in future telescopes and camera lenses? So if you design a MetaLens for a given frequency, could you have an array of them on one sensor?
So to back up a bit for people who aren't well-versed in this topic, metalenses are a new type of technology that are composed of multiple thin fins of transparent dielectric materials, such as titanium dioxide, put onto a thin layer of glass, all of which has a thickness equal to a fraction of a millimeter. The titanium dioxide, or other material that you use on the glass, acts like antennas that scatter the light. If the fins are arranged properly, you can focus the light. So, in other words, the MetaLens will work like a very classical glass or plastic lens. The scientists who have developed these lenses are already researching potential commercial applications. For the general public, MetaLenses could be very useful in making very small cameras, such as cameras and mobile phones. For laboratories, they could be very useful for making more precise optics for microscopes and optical benches. Hence, MetaLenses could be revolutionary in many types of applications. However, the same may not quite be true for astronomy. Telescopes primarily rely on concave mirrors or other large reflective surfaces to both collect and focus light, with a very heavy emphasis placed on the collecting area. The large collecting area, is needed to detect the signal from faint astronomical objects. To achieve the same performance with a MetaLens that you would get with a concave mirror in a telescope, the MetaLens would need to be as large as the concave mirror that it's replacing, and it is very likely that technical issues would arise either with trying to manufacture a MetaLens, which is the same size as the primary mirror in many of today's professional astronomical telescopes, which are often starting at 8 meters if they're currently being built. And you could also see issues with making a MetaLens rigid over an area of 8 meters or more as well. So you aren't going to replace the primary mirror within a telescope with a MetaLens. However, the instrumentation that's attached to the back of the telescope still includes many classical lenses in the light path before the light gets absorbed by the individual sensors within the instrumentation. And it's within the instruments where you could potentially replace the classical lenses with MetaLenses. Now, this probably is not a major issue for ground-based telescopes, particularly where in some telescopes the instruments may contain extra weight so that they can act as a counterbalance for the telescopes. But it could be very beneficial for space-based instrumentation, where cutting the mass needed for instrumentation allows for more mass to be used in other parts of the telescope. So, for example, storing extra coolant to cool down the detectors that are on the telescope as well. So it could be very beneficial for some parts of astronomy, but it's not going to be a major revolution.
Okay, thanks for that, George. Our second question comes from John Brooks. Does light only travel in the one direction, or does it radiate in the opposite direction as well? And if not, what actually forces light to only travel in one direction?
Well, the short answer is that it is possible for things in nature to emit only one photon, in which case the photon will only travel in one direction. The most common example involves a single atom with an electron in an excited energy state dropping to a lower energy state and emitting a single photon in the process. So this happens frequently in nature. Now, the longer explanation for this touches on quantum mechanics, where it is important to remember that many things at the subatomic level, including photons, act as both particles and waves. For photons, the particle concept comes into play when we talk about atoms absorbing or emitting photons in terms of the photoelectric effect. For an electron to move from a lower energy level, which we'll call E0, to a higher energy level, which we'll call E1, the atom needs to absorb one photon with an energy equal to the difference between E1 and E0. Two photons with half the energy will not have the same effect. Conversely, when an electron in an atom moves from the higher energy level E1 to the lower energy level E0, it will emit one and only one photon with an energy equivalent to E1 minus E0 again. The photon, when emitted, will still act like a wave in some ways, but it travels in only one direction, and it is only one photon. A second photon does not need to be emitted in the other direction at all for this to work. Also note that the energy of the photon is directly proportional to its frequency and inversely proportional to its wavelength. So, for example, a blue photon will have more energy than a red photon. The important thing to keep in mind with any type of atomic or subatomic level interaction like this is that it is necessary to conserve energy and momentum. So in our scenario where a single atom emits a single photon, the way energy is conserved is relatively straightforward. The atom starts with excess energy in the beginning, with the electron in a higher energy state. And afterwards, the excess energy from the electron dropping from the higher to a lower energy state is converted into the photon. However, the reaction needs to conserve momentum as well. While photons do not have mass, they do have momentum related to their energies and as well as their wavelengths and their frequencies. The emission of a photon by an atom can push the atom backwards, sometimes in a way that could be noticeable if we could see the individual atoms. For example, hydrogen produces a spectral line visible at 1216 angstroms. When a single hydrogen atom produces this type of photon, the kickback will cause the hydrogen atom to move in the opposite direction at a speed of 3.3 meters per second.
Okay, thanks, George. So our third question actually comes from Eleanor Horner. Eleanor is about the same age as the Jodcast. She was at Jodcast Live when it was her 10th birthday, around the same time as the Jodcast celebrated its 10th birthday. So I think now she'll be actually 11. She wrote the email when she was 10. I think she'll now be 11. So happy birthday, Eleanor, for whenever it was recently. And Eleanor asks us, how often can we see comets?
So the solar system could potentially contain 100 billion comets, according to various websites that discuss comets, including NASA websites. Most of these comets are in orbits beyond the orbit of Neptune, and in fact Pluto, which spends most of its time outside the orbit of Neptune, is like a very large comet in some ways. However, astronomers to date have only identified a few thousand comets. Many comets, particularly those in the Kuiper Belt where Pluto is found, can probably be seen anytime you want to, as long as you have a large enough telescope. However, Eleanor is probably much more interested in knowing how often we can see comets so bright that they're visible to the naked eye. A few websites have compiled lists of great comets. I would recommend the list compiled by Comet Watch, an amateur astronomy website at www.cometwatch.co.uk. In their list, they indicate that since 1900, 14 comets have appeared brighter than magnitude zero, which is equivalent to the brightness of Vega, the fourth brightest star in the sky. This is equivalent to seeing one very bright comet about every 8 years or so. So that's how often you'll see a really bright comet. Also, if you are interested, according to the International Astronomy Union's Minor Planet Center, 36 comets were discovered last year. And according to the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory Small Body Database, 80 known comets reached perihelion in their orbits. And perihelion is the location where an object is closest to the sun. So hopefully that answers your question, but I think the answer that you're looking for is that we see really bright comets once every 8 years.
Okay, thanks very much, George.